Hello, and welcome to today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, June 18th, 2020. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. Looking at today's front page, we see headlines of hundreds flock to testing site, murderer gets 40 more years for shanking fellow inmate, but we'll start with county fair to be held, but shortened. Dubuque's annual event is slated to run July 30th through August 2nd by Elizabeth Kelsey. The Dubuque County Fair will be held this year, but it will be briefer than normal. The fair board of directors announced Wednesday that, due to concerns related to COVID-19, a four-day fair will be offered this year. It is slated for Thursday, July 30th to Sunday, August 2nd at the fairgrounds in Dubuque. The event previously was slated to begin on Tuesday, July 28th. Fairgrounds General Manager Kevin Kotz said scheduling, financial, and public health concerns all played a role in the board's decision to reduce the fair from 6 days to 4. The health and safety of the community is the highest priority for us in producing this annual fair, he told the Telegraph Herald. In the interest of public health, the fair is implementing these guidelines and changes. Among the biggest changes is the postponement of this year's headliner concerts. This year's main stage lineup had included Chris Lane on Thursday night and Skid Row and Queensryche on Friday. Kotz said seating for those shows would have had to be reduced to 50% capacity to maintain social distancing. The associated reduced ticket sales would have made paying for the bands not financially feasible, he said. Financially, the fair had to look at what's good for the fair association and what's good for the community, he said. It just wasn't financially feasible for us to put on those big shows, but we still want to give the people something to celebrate. A press release states that people will have the option of keeping their tickets for the rescheduled dates or requesting a refund within a 30-day window. Those who bought tickets through Ticketmaster will receive an email with instructions from that vendor, while those who bought tickets through the fair office will need to call 563-588-1406 or email dbqfair@dbqfair.com. The fair still will have live entertainment in the festival garden each night featuring local and area bands. When the schedule of bands is finalized, it will be made available at www.dbq-fair.com. In keeping with tradition, this year's fair still will offer food and a wide variety of exhibitors. Other changes to the fair's operations include the elimination of the carnival, roaming acts, several traditional competitions, and many of the children's games due to concerns about sanitizing and social distancing. However, events such as the tractor pull, stock car racing, and the demolition derby still will be held. In some cases, these events will fill the time slots vacated by the cancellation of main stage concerts. The Demolition Derby, which is traditionally held on Sunday, now will be held on Friday night. The Truck and Tractor Pull will be held on Saturday night. The Sprint, Invaders, Open Wheel races are slated for Thursday, while the Julian Dubuque Classic races will be held on the final day of the fair. Social distancing will be considered when determining ticketing and seating for these events, Codd said. Our stadium holds 8,000 people, so half of that is 4,000 people, so they can socially distance, he said. And we have 99 acres of fairgrounds to make use of and get people to spread out. Kotz said the fair will monitor and limit the number of people on the fairgrounds, but fair board members are working with county health officials to determine what the capacity limit will be. I think each family will just have to make a decision to assess their own situation with regards to participation in the fair, and we respect everyone's decision, he said. Sanitizing stations will be available throughout the grounds, and additional signage will be posted to remind fairgoers of the importance of social distancing. The fairground is working closely with the Dubuque County Office of Iowa State University Extension and Outreach in regards to 4-H and FFA activities, Cott said. Decisions on whether and how those exhibitions will be held will come from the Extension Office in the coming weeks. We will also be announcing information on open class creative arts exhibits and livestock shows, the release states. In the end, Cott said, the decision to downsize and modify the fair was as much to do with fiscal responsibility as it was to do with public health and safety. We have to live for another day, he said. We have to live for the 2021 fair. 2020 Dubuque County Fair Schedule of Events. Thursday, July 30th. At night, sprint and stock car racing. Friday, July 31st. At night, demolition derby. Saturday, August 1st. In the afternoon, fantasy truck pull. At night, tractor pull. Sunday, August 2nd. In the afternoon, Sunday fun day activities and contests for families. At night, stock car racing, and nightly concerts will be held in the festival garden with a schedule of performers to be finalized. Next on the front page, hundreds flock to testing site. A one-day event amid the pandemic is the first step in a larger initiative by Grant County to get samples from more residents. By John Cruz. Austin McCourt was in and out before he knew it. Pulling up to the parking lot on a corner of the University of Wisconsin-Platteville campus on a humid afternoon, the Platteville resident sat in his car as officials in protective masks had him fill out paperwork and swabbed his nostril. It was a short amount of time taken out of his day, well worth it for the answers it will provide. I interact with a lot of people every day for my business, McCourt said. I just want to make sure that I'm not carrying the coronavirus. McCourt was one of hundreds of people from which samples were taken Wednesday at the free mobile testing site coordinated by the Grant County Health Department and Wisconsin National Guard. We want a better idea of the number of cases we have in Grant County, said Jody Durst, County Public Information Officer for COVID-19. This will give us a good sampling. As of Wednesday, 113 confirmed COVID-19 cases had been reported in the county, along with 12 deaths of people with coronavirus. It is one of 19 counties in the state with at least 100 confirmed cases. A total of 400 free nasal swab kits were made available at the testing site Wednesday, and 266 were administered through scheduled appointments. The remainder were available for those who showed up without appointments. Anyone older than 5 could be tested, regardless of where they lived or whether they had any symptoms linked to COVID-19. The one-day testing event was the first step in a larger initiative by the county to get residents tested. Health Department Director Jeff Kindry said the aim is to provide more testing opportunities. We are of the mindset that we will try to move around the county and provide testing about once a week, he said. We're hoping to maintain a decent level of testing in the community. While the majority of the tests were scheduled ahead of time, the site caught the attention of passerbys as well. Steve Addison of Platteville was riding his bike when he noticed the site and decided to stop by. I think it's very important that they are doing this, he said. I hope to bring more members of my family down here later today. Durst said the samples will be tested in the coming days, and participants should learn their results by Monday, June 22nd. While the results will be beneficial for participants, they also will help provide insights on the presence and spread of the virus for county officials, Durst said. The truth is that we still don't know a lot about COVID-19, she said. These kinds of tests help us get a lot better idea of how the virus spreads. Kindry said the county will continue to try to reach as many residents in providing testing throughout the coming months. The more people that participate, the clearer the picture becomes of how present the virus is in Grant County. It's going to provide very valuable information, Kendry said. It's going to be appreciated by both us and the people in the county that want to get tested. Next, murderer gets 40 more years for shanking fellow inmate. Dexter Ewing pleads guilty to attempted first-degree intentional homicide by Thomas J. Barton. Dateline, Lancaster, Wisconsin. A thrice-convicted murderer housed in a Grant County prison was sentenced Wednesday to 40 more years in prison for trying to kill a fellow inmate in 2018. And while that penalty might present no particular harm for a man already serving life sentences without the possibility of parole, Grant County Circuit Court Judge Craig Day said he hopes it presents some element of benefit to future inmates, future guards of a sentence that sends a strong message. Dexter L. Ewing, 47, pleaded guilty Wednesday to attempted first-degree intentional homicide and was sentenced to 40 years in prison and 20 years of extended supervision. Ewing was shackled at the waist and ankles and escorted into the courtroom and closely guarded during the hearing by 5 correctional officers and 2 Grant County Sheriff's Department deputies. He currently is serving life sentences without the possibility of parole for killing a woman and taking a hostage in 2008 in Milwaukee County. He was also convicted of felony murder in 2013 and of strangling a cellmate in a Columbia County jail in 2015. For reasons that everybody recognizes, there is some element of futility in this sentence, Day said. But there's hardly any more grievous record or set of circumstances that one can envision. In October 2018, Ewing used 2 shanks made out of a toothbrush to stab another inmate in the neck, said Grant County Assistant District Attorney Anthony Pizorski, Sr. The man previously had called Ewing a racial slur. According to court documents, Ewing told investigators that he intended to kill the man. In June 2019, Ewing attacked a pair of prison guards, again with a shank made out of a toothbrush, as they were preparing him for a surgical procedure, authorities said. Both prison guards suffered head injuries. Ewing allegedly again told investigators that he was trying to kill his victims. He said he wanted revenge, as he felt that he had been treated poorly at the institution. Ewing also is charged with attempted first-degree intentional homicide as a persistent repeater for allegedly trying to kill a correctional officer at Wisconsin Secure Program Facility in Boscobel in January. Authorities said Ewing stabbed the correctional officer in the neck with a shank, though the victim and another correctional officer were able to disarm Ewing before he could cause serious injury. I don't know at what point a person is labeled a serial murderer, Pizorski said during Wednesday's hearing, but if he isn't, he's very close. Ewing's attorney, Zachary Lay, argued Ewing suffers from a chronic persistent mental illness, describing him as a loose cannon. That when somebody makes him angry, there's a voice in the back of his head that tells him he needs to do something about it, Lay said. It's persistent, and it's constant, and it wears on him. It doesn't excuse, but it certainly sheds a light on what Mr. Ewing deals with. Regardless, in spite of his mental illness, he's able to ascertain right from wrong and to comport his conduct except when he chooses not to, Day said. You just can't kill people who make you angry, the judge said. Ewing told the judge that his sentence fails to address security problems at the prison. People making a decision put me into a group day room after they knew I had a murder charge pending, Ewing said. Why would you make a decision to put me back in there? In calling for the maximum sentence, Pizorski, too, said a message needs to be sent to leaders to reevaluate how they operate the Boscobel prison. When they first opened up, we didn't have attempted homicide cases, Pizorski said. People were pretty much in what we would call a solitary confinement. They went to recreation on a solitary basis. They weren't in a position to kill people. When we watch videos now, the people are walking around the prison as if they own the joint up there. He noted Ewing's aren't the only attempted homicide cases he has to prosecute that occurred at the prison. It's not only endangering the person getting stabbed in the neck, Pozorsky said. It endangers all of the guards there who have to respond to it. While he cannot meaningfully impact what the administration at WSPF does or does not do, Day said, in the end, none of us as human beings have the right to decide when some other human being isn't worth living. Ewing still faces three other counts of attempted homicide. A status conference has been scheduled for September 17th. And now, turning to the Dubuque and Tri-State page, three additional infections hit Dubuque County. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Wednesday's developments included three additional confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Dubuque County were reported from 5 p.m. Tuesday to 5 p.m. Wednesday. The county's total stood at 393 as of the latter time. There were no additional related deaths during that period, so the county's total remains at 22. The number of people diagnosed with the coronavirus who have recovered stood pat at 230, while just one person in the county with COVID-19 was hospitalized as of Tuesday, according to the most recent data from the state. Two more cases were reported in Delaware County during that time, pushing its total to 29. The number of positive cases at Dubuque Specialty Care remained at 51 between 5 p.m. Tuesday and 5 p.m. Wednesday, with the number of recovered patients also the same at 21. It is one of two long-term care outbreaks in the Iowa portion of the Telegraph Herald coverage area. As of Wednesday night, Edgewood Convalescent Home still had 10 cases, with two recovered. In Wisconsin, 256 new confirmed cases were reported Wednesday, pushing the state total to 23,454. Nine more related deaths were added to the state's official count, now at 712. Four new cases were reported Wednesday in Lafayette County, where the total now sits at 47. While no new cases were reported in Iowa County, public health officials there again urged community members to be cautious. Each of us represents an opportunity to interrupt the transmission of this virus. This week's COVID-19 dashboard reveals that 100% of recent cases did not have direct exposure to a person known to have COVID-19. This means they are not sure how they became infected, which equals community spread. This fact, coupled with significant increases in cases in neighboring counties, means we need to be cautious. In Illinois, 546 new cases and 87 additional related deaths were reported Wednesday. That pushed the state's totals to 134,185 cases and 6,485 deaths. Next, Restrictions at Sunnycrest Manor Could Stay a While, by Benjamin Fisher. Sunnycrest Manor Administrator Chris Kirsch said Wednesday that in lieu of significant changes to state requirements, long-term care facilities won't experience an easing of COVID-19-related restrictions anytime soon. Last week, Governor Kim Reynolds announced that nursing homes statewide could begin a phased approach to easing the lockdowns they entered in March as they tried to prevent often deadly outbreaks among their vulnerable residents. By meeting various testing and operations benchmarks, facilities could work back toward normal. Kirsch told the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors on Wednesday that, when facilities reach Phase 3, family members would be allowed to enter again. They'll still have to come in the door with an assessment, she said. We'd take appointments, do the 6-foot distancing, but it would be doable. But long-term care centers in Dubuque County, including the county-owned Sunnycrest, continue to operate at Phase 1, which is the pandemic-level restrictions. Officials said currently it is not possible to move to the second phase, in which the rolled-back restrictions include allowing loved ones to visit a resident who is dying or whose condition has significantly changed. The Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals, which oversees long-term care facilities, said that to move to that phase, a facility staff must use personal protective equipment in the conventional way it was intended, according to Kirsch. That means disposing of them after each use. Long-term care facilities are still optimizing our PPE, she said. We use it for a day. That is not what PPE is intended for. Kirsch said she participated in a conference call Tuesday with officials from all of the county's nursing homes. All reported they are using PPE that way. That is because no local facility, according to Kirsch and County Emergency Management Coordinator Tom Berger, can get enough PPE for it to be disposed of after each use. There is not the PPE available in the state, Berger said. It's not available from the vendors of the United States. I asked, and what Stonehill Care Center would need is four times what I have in my stockpile. You'd be going through so many gowns a day for residents who aren't even in isolation. Berger blamed that problem on a big disconnect between Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals and the Iowa Department of Public Health. But he said he expected an agreement between the two agencies to be reached later this week. I expect things to move quickly because everybody is excited to go from phase one to phase two, he said. No additional COVID-19 cases. No additional confirmed cases of COVID-19 had been reported in connection with Sunnycrest Manor in Dubuque as of late Wednesday afternoon, officials confirmed. On June 5th, officials at the facility learned that a staff member had the coronavirus. That person had no direct resident contact and had last been at the facility on June 2nd. Samples for COVID-19 testing were taken from all 164 Sunnycrest staff and 97 residents from Friday to Sunday. The results started being received on Tuesday, and as of late Wednesday afternoon, all those received so far had been negative, officials said. Not all of the results have been received yet. Next, Clarity Clinic expansion project to begin soon. By Kaylee Reese. The Clarity Clinic Pregnancy Center of Dubuque will soon break ground on a sizable expansion project. Executive Director Chris Nauman said the groundbreaking will likely happen next week as all city permits on the project were just approved. The expansion will add about 7,500 square feet to the clinic's current 2,822 square feet, creating space for more classrooms, offices, and storage space. In 2019, we had over 26,000 baby items donated to us, she said. We have no storage right now for all the items coming in. Projected cost for the project total $1.5 million, though Nauman said $200,000 has currently been raised. Because the clinic's free services are 100% donor-funded, Nauman said she hopes the community will come together to support the project. Construction will extend off the clinic's property at 3365 Hillcrest Road, purchased in 2016 after outgrowing the previous Asbury Road location. Nauman said the clinic had 2,970 appointments last year, prompting the need for more space yet again. John Herrig, the project's general contractor, said a site plan should be finalized this week, which will include an extended main level and a basement. Having 70% of the building space be brand new will help the clinic continue supporting clients, he said. They were just overrunning their space, Herrig said. They doubled and tripled their clients. The expansion will feature two large classrooms for groups in the First Steps program, which supports and educates expectant parents on a variety of baby-related topics, Nauman said. There will also be places for one-on-one meetings, six new offices, and a kids' zone for children to play while parents take classes. Nauman added that the new space will allow for social distancing measures if still needed. The current building setup wasn't fit for safe group meetings amid COVID-19, she said, though classes were still streamed. The clinic also was forced to stop taking donations, but will resume this summer. The expansion will offer a better place to store donated baby items, as Nauman noted they have now overflowed into closets. A store-like area will be set up for clients to purchase items with points earned through attending clinic classes. The expansion also will create space for a new ultrasound machine, which Nauman said was recently donated by a man wanting to make a contribution on behalf of his late wife. As the project commences, Nauman said the clinic will continue campaigning for funds, including by finding 150 people to pledge $50 per month for a self-decided duration. The clinic also plans to hold a fundraising golf tournament in September at Eagle Ridge Resort in Galena, Illinois, which it also did last year. Any support we can get to offset the expense of this would be wonderful, she said. Under news in brief, City of Dubuque reopens playgrounds. Playgrounds reopened Wednesday morning in the City of Dubuque parks. The city announced the move in a press release issued shortly after 11 a.m., in which officials reminded users to take precautions to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. It states that city staff and public health experts felt they could reopen the park's outdoor playgrounds with signage promoting preventative actions and encouragement that, if social distancing is not possible due to heavy use of the playground unit, residents delay their visit or wait their turn at a physical distance. Residents also are reminded to take along hand sanitizer and to wear masks when you can't social distance from others outside your household unit. Park pavilions and restrooms remain closed due to city budget constraints, the release states, noting that water fountains also are not running due to coronavirus concerns. The city also announced that capacity restrictions have been lifted at the three city skate parks. And from the Tri-State page, Bellevue testing the waters for possible pool project. City Council approves forming a panel that will explore options for updating or replacing the facility, by John Cruz, Dateline Bellevue, Iowa. Bellevue officials once again are looking into updating the city's current pool facility. City Council members this week approved the formation of a committee that will explore options for updating or replacing Bellevue's swimming pool. This marks the second time the city will explore updating the facility, which was constructed in 1965. In 2006, the city held a bond referendum asking residents to approve a $1 million loan for the construction of a new $3 million pool facility. However, the vote fell just short of reaching the required 60% majority. City Administrator Abby Scrivseth said residents have shown renewed interest in examining a pool project again, partially because of the decision to keep the facility closed this summer over concerns of the COVID-19 pandemic. Council members this week also declined a request by residents to reconsider opening the pool this summer. While the current pool remains operational, the age of the facility has some city officials concerned over how many years it has left. "We have some of the oldest pools in the state," Scrivseth said. "We have been taking good care of it, but we always have our fingers crossed that the pool will fill every year." The committee will largely be made up of Bellevue residents who will research potential options for the pool, from expanding and renovating the existing vessel or constructing a completely new pool. Council member Tim Roth said the current pool is likely nearing the end of its lifespan and that many residents would like to see additional amenities. "We still don't have things like a zero-depth entry or a splash pad," he said. "At some point, we would like to update it." However, Scrivseth said the cost was a major factor for the project falling short years ago, and it will remain so if a new pool is pursued again. We have a new hospital being built in the county, and the school district is trying to build a new school, she said. It's not likely a great time to be pursuing a project like this. However, she noted that any project is likely a few years from coming to fruition because the committee likely will spend at least 1 year researching pool options. Roth said securing the necessary funds will be challenging, but he added that, given enough time, it could be successful. There's a lot of hurdles, but we'll have to see, he said. Committee members could start doing some fundraising now. Something could be figured out. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, June 18, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. George W. Flanagan, 72, of Leisure Lake, formerly of Dubuque, passed away peacefully on June 16th at home, surrounded by family. Funeral service will be at 11 a.m., Friday, June 19th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, Dubuque. Burial will follow in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. today at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory. We remind you to practice the social distancing guidelines, and if you are not able to attend the service, a live stream will be on the funeral home's Facebook page. George was born on July 3, 1947, in Dubuque, the son of George and Enid Rudd Flanagan. He married Mary Lou Cornwell on June 11, 1966, at St. Raphael Cathedral. George worked for H&W Motor Express for 30 years until retirement. He was a member of the Teamsters Local 421 and the Teamsters Retirees. The family would like to thank Dr. Eric Engelman, the Oncology Department, the third floor staff at Mercy, Hospice of Dubuque, Marvin Ney with Paramount Ambulance for all the wonderful care and kindness they gave George. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to the Freedom Center or Hospice of Dubuque. Donald Ellery Brown, 83 years old, of Cedar Falls, Iowa, and formerly of Dubuque and Jessup, died Wednesday, June 10th, at Unity Point Allen Memorial Hospital in Waterloo. He was born June 29, 1936, in Independence, the son of Roland Brown and Eula Winona Bailey Brown. He graduated from Jessup High School with the class of 1954. On July 17, 1955, he was united in marriage to Vetra Arvilla Ewalt at Barclay Presbyterian Church, rural Dunkerton. Donald worked for the United States Postal Service before retirement. His positions included postal inspector, director of finance, postmaster in Jessup, and later served as postmaster in Dubuque, where he retired in 1995. He also served several years in the U.S. Army and Air Force Reserves. A private family funeral was held on Tuesday, June 16th, at White Funeral Home, Jessup, with Reverend Joshua D. Brown officiating. Burial was at Old Barclay Cemetery in Jessup, Iowa. Memorials will be directed to the Old Barclay Cemetery Association and may be sent in care of White Funeral Home, 1315 Main Street, Jessup, Iowa, 50648. Online condolences may be posted at www.white-mthope.com. James Lewis Jim Berry, 87, of Dubuque, passed away on June 16th at Stonehill Care Center. Funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Friday, June 19th, at Mueller Chapel, Linwood Cemetery, where family and friends may gather after 10 a.m. at the chapel. The Dubuque County Sheriff's Department will provide an honor guard. Graveside military honors will follow by the Dubuque Marine Corps League. A live stream of the services will be on Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory's Facebook page. Jim was born on August 26, 1932, in Turkey River, Iowa, the son of Patrick and Lucille Ferris Berry. He served in the United States Marine Corps from 1951 to 1971 and was a Dubuque County Sheriff Deputy from 1971 to 1989. He married Beverly Fisher in 1954 and later married the love of his life, Patricia Good, in 1977. Jim loved his old-time country music and sang and played his guitar with his sister, Evelyn, at the Old Melody Mill and on KDTH Radio. He especially enjoyed time with his family and friends. In lieu of flowers, a James Berry Memorial will be established. The family would like to thank Dr. Cow and his staff, along with all the nurses who took great care of him at Stonehill. Mark L. Wilbin, 48, of Davis Junction, formerly of Rossholt, Wisconsin, died Friday, June 12th, in DeSoto, Wisconsin. He was born September 3rd, 1971, in Dubuque, the son of Leroy and Phyllis Perkins Wilbin. On June 14th, 1999, he married Regina Baxley at Red Rock Canyon in Las Vegas, Nevada. She survives. Mark graduated from Hempstead High School in Dubuque and continued his education at GMI School of Engineering and Management in Flint, Michigan, where he graduated with a degree in mechanical engineering. Among his favorite pastimes, he enjoyed hunting, fishing, the outdoors, spending time and doing projects with his family. He also loved his Labradors. Visitation will be from 1 p.m. until 4 p.m. on Saturday, June 20th, at Peterson Kramer Funeral Home, 1302 6th Street, Wausau, Wisconsin, 54403. At the family's request, masks are mandatory and the responsibility of the attendee. Memorials may be directed in Mark's memory to Pheasants Forever or the Arbor Day Foundation. Online condolences may be expressed at www.petersonkramer.com. Dale J. Trum, 58, of Madison, formerly of Platteville, died June 15th. Private family services will be held. Public visitation will occur on Saturday, June 20th, from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. at Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville. Phoebe R. McRae, 88, of Benton, Iowa, died June 16th. A private mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, June 20th, at St. Patrick's Church in Benton. Burial will be in the church cemetery. A public visitation for friends will occur from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday at the church. Casey Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Benton is assisting the family. Lee Allen Lee Hafer, 49, also known to respond to Leroy, Elroy, Levi, Lely, Leebone, Roy, and Lee Monster, passed away on Saturday, June 13th. Services will be held on Saturday, June 27th, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Mount Carroll, Illinois. Visitation will take place at 10 a.m., with services at 11 a.m., followed by a celebration of Lee's life at his favorite place, the farm. Lloyd Schulte, 86, of Waukon, died June 16th. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at Martin Funeral Home in Waukon, where there will be a 3:30 scripture service. Funeral services will be held Saturday, June 20th at 11 a.m. at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Waukon. Burial with military honors will be at Mount Olivet Cemetery, Waukon. Samuel J. Sam Parkin, 64, of Peosta, died May 1st. Sam's Mass of Christian Burial will be held on Saturday, July 18th at 10 a.m. at Cathedral of St. Raphael. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Edward R. Eddie Bowers, Jr. of Dubuque, died Monday, June 15th. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Private services will be held at Egelhoff Siegert and Casper Westview Funeral Home, where complete arrangements are pending. Nancy Jo Sanders, 63, of Dubuque, died June 17th. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 23rd, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where a service will be held at 7 p.m. Funeral services. Most funeral homes and churches are practicing social distancing guidelines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Please contact specific locations for more information. James A. Baker, Asbury, Iowa. Services at 10:30 a.m. Friday, June 19th at St. Joseph Catholic Church, Key West, Iowa. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. today at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road. Charles Breeze, Garnavillo, Iowa. Services at 10 a.m. Friday, June 19th at St. Mary's Catholic Church, Gutenberg, Iowa. Visitation from 8:30 to 9:45 p.m. Friday at the church. Sharon A. Broshaus, Stockton, Illinois. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. today at Lehman Funeral Home, Lena, Illinois. Harlan E. Bruner, Savannah, Illinois. Services at 10 a.m. Friday, June 19th at Mount Carroll Church of God. Visitation from 4 to 8 p.m. today at the church. Severna Colwell, McGregor, Iowa. Services at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 20th at First Lutheran Church, McGregor. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, June 19th at Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, McGregor, and after 10 a.m. Saturday at the church. Sarah P. Enyart, Postville, Iowa. Visitation from 3 to 8 p.m. Friday, June 19th at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Monona, Iowa. Sister Dorothy Feehan, BVM, Dubuque. Sharing of memories via Zoom from 9:30 to 10:15 a.m. Friday, June 19th. Virtual visitation from 10:30 to 10:45 a.m., followed by a Mass of Christian burial. Cecilia Gavin, Cascade, Iowa. Services at 11 a.m. today at Sacred Heart Catholic Church, Maquoketa. Visitation after 10 a.m. today at the church. Lee Allen Hafer, Mount Carroll, Illinois. Memorial service at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 27th at Law Jones Funeral Home, Mount Carroll. Visitation from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Christopher J. Herrig, Dubuque. Services at noon today at Nativity Church. Celebration of life from 4 to 8 p.m. today at Happy's Place. Daniel J. Lidberg, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Services at 11 a.m. today at Bible Baptist Church in Prairie du Chien. Robert W. Meyer, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Graveside services at 10 a.m. Friday, June 19th at Rossville Cemetery, Rossville, Iowa. Visitation from 4 to 8 p.m. today at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Monona, Iowa. Mary Lou Thomas, Dyersville, Iowa. Services at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 20th, at St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, June 19th, at Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville, and from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. at the funeral home. Turning to the sports page, Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, Brianna Felderman of Dubuque Senior. Bright future ahead for Felderman. Senior standout to play golf at Mount Mercy, by Shannon Mum. Dubuque senior standout golfer Brianna Felderman had hopes of finishing high school with her best season yet, but the COVID-19 pandemic put an abrupt end to those aspirations. Fortunately, the Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week will have the opportunity to continue her career at Mount Mercy University in Cedar Rapids, Iowa in the fall. I was extremely disappointed when I heard that the entire season was going to be canceled, she said. I had really high hopes for the season and had put in a lot of time over the off-season. Felderman played on three state tournament teams while at senior and helped the Rams to consecutive fifth-place finishes in the Class 4A field as a sophomore and a junior. Felderman shot an 81-76-157 to finish seventh in the individual portion of the state meet as a junior. The previous season, she shot 87-87-172 to take ninth place at state. I spent a lot of time hitting in my basement this past year and practiced my chipping and putting often, she said. I really thought I can improve at state and end on a high note. This season also would have been extra special for Brianna, with her father, Tim Felderman, as her head coach for the first time. My dad has been the assistant coach for a couple years, so it's been really nice having him there with me, but this year would have been extra special with him as the head coach, Brianna said. We have a really close relationship, and this was something we were both looking forward to. Golf has always been a family affair for the Feldermans. It's a great way to spend time together, and it's a lifetime sport, Tim said. Getting to spend that extra time with Brianna has brought us a lot closer. Brianna will compete in the Junior PGA Tournament in Iowa City this weekend and hopes to continue playing in tournaments until school starts in the fall. She's really gotten a lot stronger over the years, and her drives have gotten a lot better, Tim said. She puts in the time to work on her game, and I think she will do well next year at Mount Mercy. Brianna said that if she has learned anything the past few months, it is to never take anything in life for granted. I never would have thought my high school career would have ended this way, so it just makes me cherish every day, she said. I'm very thankful that I will get to continue golfing at the collegiate level. Upon completion of her college career, Brianna said she would love to pursue a coaching career. I know that golf is going to be a part of my life for a long, long time, Brianna said. Next, Trailblazers catching on. Young Dyersville Beckman squad holds off Independence by Jim Leitner. They don't have a lineup stacked with household names yet, but the young Dyersville Beckman Trailblazers play scrappy, fundamental baseball that should pay dividends as the season progresses. The Class 2A number 7 ranked Blazers improved to 2-1 on Wednesday night with a 5-3 victory over Independence at Commercial Club Park's Jenk Field. Beckman started three seniors, three juniors, a sophomore, and two freshmen. We have a lot of guys who go out and play hard, and that's what Beckman baseball is all about, sophomore catcher Owen Hunergarth said. That's what the coaches expect of us. Since we have a lot of young guys, the key is building chemistry. Obviously, the next couple of years look good with all the young guys we have, but we still think we can do some damage in the WAMAC this year. Junior left-hander Cameron Craffel earned the pitching victory in his varsity debut. He fanned seven, scattered three hits, and allowed two earned runs in six innings. Nick Offerman recorded the final three outs. I felt pretty good the whole game and hit my spot, said Craffel, a junior. It means quite a bit to get this first win. I've been wanting to do this for a while, so it feels good to be able to do it. Beckman jumped to a 2-0 lead in the bottom of the first thanks to a pair of hits, a walk, and an error. Luke Gedkin led off with a hustle double into shallow left center field, and Nick Offerman singled on a chopper through the left side. Gedkin scored when Owen Hunergarth reached on an error, and Offerman came across on Josh Engler's sacrifice fly to center field. Beckman put three runners in scoring position over the next two innings, but didn't score. That gave Independence an opening. In the top of the fourth, Logan Schmidt delivered a two-out base hit and took second on an errant pickoff attempt. He scored when Corver Hubke reached on an error to pull the Mustangs within 2-1. Beckman immediately responded in the bottom half. Nate Offerman reached on a hit batsman, Riley Fangman walked, and the two advanced on a Gedkin bunt. Luke Shields and Nick Offerman followed with hit batsmen to force in a run and chase reliever Zach Seidels in favor of Jake Seidels. Two more runs came across when Hunergarth reached on a fielder's choice and an overthrow on a double play attempt. Independence staged a rally in the seventh thanks to three walks. Tegan McAnany doubled in a pair of runs to account for the final score. "We're a young team and we're still trying to figure things out," Beckman coach Fred Martin said. "But I really like the way our guys compete. There's no doubt we have the ability to build something good this season." Western Dubuque's Harris receives diagnosis on arm injury. Western Dubuque All-State baseball player Calvin Harris will be able to resume his senior season after an injury scare early this week. An MRI on Wednesday revealed a strain of his medial flexor in his right forearm, according to his father, Scott Harris. The two-time Gatorade Iowa Player of the Year suffered the injury while pitching in the second inning of the Bobcats season opener against Dubuque Wallert on Monday and immediately exited the game. Harris will not throw for 2 weeks, but hopes to play in a designated hitter role as early as next week. Under sports in brief, Kobe Bryant pilot may have been disoriented. Dateline Los Angeles. The pilot of the helicopter that crashed in thick fog, killing Kobe Bryant and seven other passengers, reported he was climbing when he actually was descending, federal investigators said in documents released Wednesday. Ara Zobayan radioed to air traffic controllers that he was climbing to 4,000 feet, 1,220 meters, to get above clouds on January 26th when, in fact, the helicopter was plunging toward a hillside where it crashed northwest of Los Angeles. The report by the National Transportation Safety Board said Zobayan may have misperceived the pitch of the aircraft, which can happen when a pilot becomes disoriented in low visibility. Experts said shortly after the crash that the path of the flight indicated Zobayan was disoriented. The 1,700 pages of reports do not offer a conclusion of what caused the crash, but compile factual reports. A final report on the cause is due later. Bryant, his 13-year-old daughter Gianna, and six of their friends were killed along with Zobayan. Carton can play for Marquette. Dateline Milwaukee. Marquette says the NCAA has granted guard DJ Carton a waiver that will enable the Ohio State transfer to play for his new team in the upcoming season. Carton otherwise wouldn't have been able to make his Marquette debut until the 2021-22 season. The 6'2" guard from Bettendorf, Iowa, has 3 seasons of eligibility remaining. Carton played 20 games and averaged 10.4 points for Ohio State as a freshman. After announcing January 30th that he was stepping away from the program for mental health reasons, Carton entered the transfer portal in March. Love honored with Courage Award, Dateline Cleveland. Cavaliers forward Kevin Love will receive the Arthur Ashe Courage Award for his efforts in raising awareness about mental health. Love, whose openness about his lifelong battles with anxiety triggered nationwide discussion and helped spur the NBA to do more to help players deal with emotional issues, will receive the award at Sunday's ESPYs in Los Angeles. Named in honor of the tennis champion, the Arthur Ashe Award honors those who find ways through sports to make a difference far beyond the field of play and impact the world in indelible ways. And finally, from tennis, French Open moved back a week. The French Open already was postponed from May to September because of the coronavirus pandemic and now is being pushed back an additional week. The French Tennis Federation says its Grand Slam tournament's main draw will be played at Roland Garros from September 27th to October 11th. That doubles the gap from the September 13th end of the U.S. Open. The French Open originally was moved from a May start to September 20th. Now its qualifying will begin September 21st and finish on September 25th. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, June 18th, 2020. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. As always, thanks for listening, and be safe.